Wednesday, January 18, 2017, you are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, sports writer from Denver, Colorado. Hey, every single Wednesday, you can find us pretty much making fun of most everyone in the sports world, and hopefully also providing you with just a little bit of common sense, maybe a little bit of insight here and there. If you would like to recommend the podcast, and we appreciate it every single time that you do that, please let your friends, your family, your coworkers, whoever it might be, let them know they can subscribe to the podcast pretty much anywhere that podcasts are available. You can go to iTunes, Stitcher, Podcast Republic, Google Play, Audio Boom. Head over to blogtalkradio.com. You can always find it there. Or you can go to our website, dailydosesports.wordpress.com, where you will also find a new article or two every single week. Got to make sure that you stop by and check that out this week. I'm not sure if you guys realize this. There's a petition being signed in Southern California that you might not be aware of. You might want to head over to dailydosesports.wordpress.com and find out exactly what's going on with that petition. Also, make sure to stop by our podcast network page, rogueintel.com. Of course, Rogue Intel is a family of podcasts. And if you head over there, you are sure to find a few different podcasts. Going to be a little bit different than what you see here. Might not be sports. Could be entertainment. Could be travel, could be a number of different things you can find over at rogueintel.com that you are going to get addicted to and listen to each and every single week. If you've got a question, got a comment, maybe you need some advice, whatever it might be, maybe you got a suggestion for the show, whatever it might be, you can hit us up on email, dailydosesports@gmail.com, or find us over on Twitter or Facebook. Both of those handles are at Daily Dose Sports. That is D-A-L-Y, Daily Dose Sports. Today on the show, of course, the NFL Conference Championships are now set. There are just four teams left. Oh, where did the season go? The season has gone by so quickly. We will recap the divisional playoffs and give you our picks for who is going to end up in Super Bowl 51. You know, the NBA All-Star break is nearly here. It's just a couple weeks away. I've got a big problem with it. It might not be what you think, but I've got a big problem with the NBA All-Star game. Something going on over there makes zero sense. College basketball is still early, but we have a few teams that are already disappointing us big time. And we are going to hand out our annual college football awards. You've got to make sure to stick around for that. Plus, as we do every single week, got to make sure that you stick around for the Daily Dose Top 5. You never know which direction the Daily Dose Top 5 is going to go, but you got to make sure that you stick around for it. I do want to talk a little college hoops. And I understand that we don't care about college basketball just yet. I get it. But I also know March Madness is coming. Think back. It just seems like yesterday we were talking about, hey, here comes the NFL. Here comes college football. March Madness is coming very quickly. It will be here before you know it. And the thing is, you don't want to get tripped up by knowing which teams aren't legit. Because remember in college basketball, it's not like college football. In college hoops, like every team gets in. If you didn't get in, there's something wrong with you. Now, to be fair, some of these teams that we're going to talk about today, they may not get in. They may end up stumbling. Some of them are going to sneak their way in, but you might want to keep them in mind. When the brackets come out, unless they've made some major improvements, there's going to be some problems with these teams. We aren't saying these teams can't bounce back and get better. In fact, one of them, I expect to bounce back and improve a little bit. They can still get it together by March Madness, but they want to pick it up pretty soon. Got four teams here that are struggling, that had some higher expectations. And they're not getting it done right now. First up, it's got to be Connecticut. Yes, the Huskies lost swingman Daniel Hamilton, but they had one of their best recruiting classes in years. So going into the season, everyone's thinking that head coach Kevin Ollie can get this group up to speed. Here's the problem with Connecticut. They can't score. They cannot score. They're currently 7-10. And averaging just 65 points a game. Now, when I say they can't score, well, yeah, 65 points, that's not that bad. Against Houston earlier this season, they scored 12 points in the entire first half. Now, defensively, Connecticut is not that bad. Next year, this young group could be pretty good. And if they could just kind of figure out some offense, because of how good they do play defense right now, they could get better this year. I could see Connecticut kind of improving as the season goes on. But right now, I'll be honest, Connecticut can't score on a Kardashian right now. Things are tough up in Connecticut. Really, really struggling to get going. I'll give you another team. I'm going to say it. Some of you are going to get mad when I say this, but this team is struggling. And they are not exactly what everyone was hoping they would be. Yes, I'm talking about the Duke Blue Devils. I know. Grayson Allen is like the filthiest white player since, I don't know, John Stockton. But right now, that's actually the least of the Blue Devils' problem. Duke right now is a very, very selfish team. Now, when you hear that, you say, okay, they're a selfish team. What's the big deal? They don't pass the ball enough. That's not the only thing that selfishness affects. You might think, yes, so what if they only average 14 assists per game? Big deal. But see, selfishness, especially in basketball, creeps into a lot of different areas. Because they're kind of a young, selfish team, they don't always play hard. When you become a little bit older, you start to look at your teammates and you say, I've got to play hard for the guy next to me. Right now, they don't do that. They don't always help on defense. Again, because they're a little bit of a selfish team, that's his problem. I'm not sliding over and taking a charge. Are you crazy? A little bit young, a little bit experienced. They turn the ball over way too much. And as a result, the Duke Blue Devils are extremely inconsistent right now. Now, they're 14-4. You hear 14-4? What's the big deal? Duke's fine. Duke's great. They're 2-3 in conference. And don't forget, Mike Krzyzewski is still out a few more weeks. And this group needs Mike Krzyzewski desperately. Given if he does come back, and he comes back healthy, and he is actually able to coach this team up, I expect Duke to still have a very strong finish to the season, probably make some noise in the tournament. If Coach K doesn't come back as soon as they said he would, Duke's in trouble. Because these young guys need some coaching, and they need his experience, and they need some of that wisdom that Mike Krzyzewski has. So yeah, Grayson Allen sweeping the leg right now, it's a bit of a problem, but it's not as big of a problem as some of the other issues facing the Duke Blue Devils. I'll give you another team. One out of the Big 12, the Oklahoma Sooners. Yes, Oklahoma lost Buddy Hield. They lost Isaiah Cousins, and they lost Ryan Spangler. But Lon Kruger has done a very good job recruiting kids to Norman. So it isn't like they are without talent. Jordan Woodard is a stud, and everyone thought, well, they'll just keep playing at a very high level, except that Oklahoma can't play any defense. Oklahoma right now is averaging over 73 points a game allowed. As bad as that is, they're not a very good rebounding team. And as a result, you can't get stops, you can't get rebounds, which contributes again to not being able to get more stops because the other team's getting more and more possessions. Right now, Oklahoma is 7-9, just 1-4 in conference. Now, the Big 12, pretty good. And when I say pretty good, I mean really good. Big 12's pretty tough. So the schedule's not going to get any easier. Oklahoma's going to have to figure some things out. I'm going to give you one more team. Yes, it's a little bit of a homer pick. But I'm going to give you one more team that is really struggling and really disappointing so far this year. A team that going into March Madness, even if they finally start to figure things out, you might want to keep it in the back of your mind. These teams are struggling a little bit. Yes, I'm talking about the University of Colorado. Now, it's Colorado. Let's be honest. How disappointing can they be? It's not like we expect too much. But CU has been to 5 dances under head coach Tad Boyle. Yes, they lost Josh Scott. But could Josh Scott really make that big of a difference to this team? Well, apparently, yes. Because this group is horrible defensively. They don't help. They don't recover. They don't rotate. They allow 71 points per game. And I'm going to be honest, they haven't really gotten to the real big beef on their schedule yet. They've played UCLA and a couple other teams, but they're not playing the toughest part of their schedule yet. The Pac-12 is going to get much tougher. Now, on the plus side, their offense isn't very good either, but it's mostly their defense. Right now, their defense is horrible. And if you watch them, you see it immediately. This team doesn't understand how to play defense, and Tad Boyle has got his work cut out for him up in Boulder. So far, the Colorado Buffaloes are 0-4 in conference. They could struggle for a while. They're just 10-7 overall, and they had a soft schedule to start the season. They played some really bad teams. So, University of Colorado, another one of those teams. Shoulder to shoulder, they continue to suck. All right, got to move on to the NFL. Of course, the big news is the divisional playoffs. We'll get to those in just one second. But we also had some other news coming out of the NFL this week. Yes, talking about some moves. The San Diego Chargers are moving to Los Angeles. You know, the Spanos family announced last week that the Chargers will be moving to a city that doesn't like them and doesn't want them. Keep in mind that so much of Los Angeles is a Raiders town or a 49ers town, or bottom line, Los Angeles is whoever is winning town. So I don't know. They might be Packers fans now. I don't know what they are. But a lot of times, L.A. is a Raiders town. They're not really a Chargers town at all. Most people in L.A. have been raised to hate the Chargers. The problem with the Chargers coming is that most people have been raised to kind of hate them, and also that they don't win enough to get into the good graces. Because if the Chargers were winning, like back in the early 80s, when Dan Fouts and Kellen Winslow and Charlie Joyner and Wes Chandler and those guys were going, I would imagine that there were a number of LA fans that are like, I don't know, I guess I'll be a Chargers fan. I can totally see that happening. But that's not the case right now. So it's not like LA is going to adopt this team and be like, oh, I guess we can start cheering for the Chargers now. They don't win enough. Spanos says he can't afford to keep the team in San Diego. A little bit odd because his relocation fees and some of the money that was available to him seems like it would have been actually made more sense to stay there. But he says he can't afford to keep them there. Sell the team. If you can't afford it, get rid of it. Somebody else can afford it. Because I'm also seeing the San Diego Chargers not be able to afford to sign their draft picks. To not be able to name the last time the Chargers went out and signed a big name free agent. I don't even have to have a big name. A decent free agent? A good free agent? We got to go back a ways, don't we? I'm trying to think of the last big name free agent that they signed. Like big now, Orlando Franklin from the, that doesn't count. Like an average or below average offensive lineman, that doesn't count. I can't come up with one. If Spanos can't afford to run the franchise, sell the franchise. Go away. You know, I'll tell you who gets hurt in all this. I'll tell you who really pays the price for these team moves like this. Well, at least in this situation, the people that really truly pay the price for the San Diego Chargers moving, well, is the fans of the other teams that get to go see their team play in beautiful San Diego. Like, there's Bronco fans that go to San Diego because when the Broncos play in San Diego, then they like get to see them in nice San Diego. I don't know if there are that many Charger fans, but other teams' fans are really going to pay. Now they don't get to go to San Diego and see their team play. You see what I'm saying? Because every home game I see for the Chargers, the other team has more fans than Charger fan. So that's who really is going to pay for this. Not so much Charger fans, because I don't know if they exist. Now, the Chargers are actually scrambling to come up with a new logo. I don't know if you've seen the new logo. The first logo came out. It was like an LA, it looked like the Los Angeles Dodgers logo. It was just a blue and white LA with a lightning bolt. It looked like the Dodgers and like the Tampa Bay Lightning had a baby. So a lot of people complained about that. So then they changed it and made it the powder blue instead of the Dodger blue. Everybody still roasted them for that. And then they just basically went back to their logo from San Diego, but they changed San Diego to Los Angeles. What difference does it make? Nobody's going to watch that team. The Oakland Raiders are going to file their relocation papers to move the franchise officially to Las Vegas. You know, they've never been able to get the stadium deal that they want in the Bay Area. And Vegas says they'll give them that. The original plan for the Raiders is to partner up with casino magnate Sheldon Adelson to get a state-of-the-art stadium built in Las Vegas for the Raiders. The Raiders will need league approval from 24 owners this spring, but they think they can get that. And then they will need to continue playing their games in Oakland for another 2 years until the stadium in Vegas is ready. I know, this is probably a done deal. But I'm just throwing this out there. I just want to plant this seed into your brain a little bit. Wouldn't it be hilarious if San Diego raises the money to get the Raiders a stadium in San Diego instead of the Chargers? Like, hey, look, we raised the bazillion dollars to get a stadium. Oh, no, not for the Chargers. We meant for the other team. We wanted the Raiders to come down here and be, wouldn't it be awesome? Just throwing that out there. I can't imagine anyone in San Diego being motivated enough to actually do something like that, but it'd be kind of funny, wouldn't it? We did see some coaches hired. Saw a few coaches hired throughout the NFL. The Denver Broncos, of course, hired Miami defensive coordinator Vance Joseph. You know, the thing that stood out to me about the Vance Joseph hire is to see John Elway's thinking. Because everyone here is thinking, of course, he's going to go get an offensive guy. He's going to go get an offensive guy. You can see that John Elway is looking at this situation and saying, if our defense is outstanding, and I mean one of the best ones, we don't have to worry as much about our offense. I think that's what John Elway truly is thinking. And when you think back to his, you know, playing career and you think back to what he's already seen, in the position that he's in, I think that's absolutely what he's thinking. He's looking at when the Broncos had that high-powered offense with Peyton Manning and went into that Super Bowl against Seattle and got thumped, and he's saying, we're not doing that again. We've got to be the more physical team. And I think that's why he went to get Vance Joseph. Also, Elway kind of got a little bit of a steal. He picked up former Chargers head coach Mike McCoy to come back to Denver as the offensive coordinator, and he went and got Bill Musgrave, the Oakland Raiders offensive coordinator, and brought him back to be the quarterback's coach. So he kind of went and took two rival teams' guys and brought them here. And let's be honest, after watching that offense they had here this last year, they might need to go get like three or four more coaches. I don't know, because that was horrible. The San Diego Chargers did hire Buffalo Bills offensive coordinator Anthony Lynn. Now, how jacked up is the situation in Buffalo? Anthony Lynn was the offensive coordinator in Buffalo. And instead of staying there and taking their vacant head coaching position, he decided he would rather go coach for the Spanos family in San Diego and that mess moving to Los Angeles. He's like, I know it looks bad, but you don't realize what I'm dealing with here in Buffalo. This is a mess. Like that, yes, that's a disaster, but that's not anything compared to what I've got here with Doug Whaley. Wow. How bad off is Buffalo right now? We talked about it last week. They're a mess. Buffalo Bills hired Boston comedian Bill Burr. Wait, what? That's not Bill Burr? Well, who is it? Carolina Panthers defensive coordinator Sean McDermott? It looks like Bill Burr. Are we sure that's not Bill Burr? Looks a lot. I'll be honest. I think I'd rather have old Billy Redface than Sean McDermott. Maybe I'm just guessing. I don't know. But go look him up. I'm not making this up. Looks a lot like Bill Burr. The Los Angeles Rams hired 30-year-old Washington Redskins offensive coordinator Sean McVay. He'll be taking over for Jeff Fisher in L.A. Now, I want you to think about this. 30-year-old coach. Really young. Going to be younger than some of his players. That is not actually what I want you to think about, though. Here's what I want you to think about. The Rams have basically hired a millennial to be their head coach. Aww. Can you imagine this? He's going to be tweeting his plays, like Instagramming his game plans. He'll be taking selfies on the sideline. When the Rams get beat, he'll be in there doing his interviews. I don't know. I'm just feeling so attacked right now. Can you imagine the amount of hugs that Sean McVay is going to need in Los Angeles? I'm telling you. Might not go quite like Rams fans are hoping. And then we did mention this last week, but you know, the Jacksonville Jaguars did hire Doug Marrone. So right now, there's just a few positions out there left. I actually think Doug Marrone is a really good fit for the Jacksonville Jaguars. I mean, think about it. They need a coach, okay? And he might be the only person on the planet that would agree to coach them. That's kismet, people. Spin that however you want. That is the exact right match. Like, they need a guy, and he's the only guy who would do it. Seems like that's just kind of the match made in heaven, right? Maybe that's just me. Just a couple positions left. You know, in the past couple of years, we've had some major defenses. Had some really, really good defenses. You think of the Seahawks. Think of the Broncos, obviously. This year is the year of the quarterback. Think about it. The best quarterbacks have advanced in every playoff game so far. If you have good quarterback versus not so good quarterback is winning. And finally, on Sunday, we actually got some pretty good games. Saturday is okay. Wasn't great. Sunday was excellent. Of course, the Atlanta Falcons beat the Seattle Seahawks 36-20. The Falcons racked up 422 yards against that Seattle defense. And I'm telling you right now, Seattle misses safety Earl Thomas like a crackhead misses the pipe. Hey, I've given Matt Ryan some grief in the past. It didn't seem like he ever lived up to the hype. He was 1-4 in the postseason. He's doing it this year. Matt Ryan looks MVP-like. On Saturday, Ryan went 26 of 37 for 338 yards, had three touchdowns. And you know, the Falcons' defense is not the mess that it used to be. They held Seattle to just 309 yards. They forced two turnovers. I expected Atlanta to win. Here's the thing that I didn't expect from that game. I didn't expect Atlanta to be more physical than the Seattle Seahawks. I didn't think I'd see that. And they absolutely were. Saturday night, we saw the New England Patriots trounce the Houston Texans 34-16. I'll be honest, though. Tom Brady wasn't that good. Threw two interceptions. He cried a lot anytime anybody got near him. And as embarrassing as that was, well, it was actually nowhere near as embarrassing as Texans quarterback Brock Osweiler, who continues to remind us that in the great scheme of life, he's not very good at playing football. Brock was 23 of 40 with 198 yards and three interceptions. He had 198 yards more than I did. Now, I don't like the wide receiver situation for the Patriots, but Deion Lewis is an absolute game changer, and he can hurt you in a lot of different ways. He can hurt you in the special teams game. He can hurt you running the football. He can hurt you catching the ball out of the backfield. I did think it was a little weird, a little bit strange, that Bill Belichick actually named Osweiler the Patriots MVP of the game, but I don't know, whatever. I mean, name who you want to name, I guess, but a little bit weird, just a little bit strange to me. Sunday, we saw the best game of the weekend as the Green Bay Packers knocked off the Dallas Cowboys 34-31. Everyone is playing one game right now, but it seems like Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers is playing like a completely different game than everybody else. Dude racked up 356 yards, two touchdowns, and he just kept coming up with big plays at clutch times. And the windows that he's throwing these footballs into is absolutely incredible. Last week, I made my prediction on this game. What was it that I said again, by the way? If Dallas goes out and they try to throw the ball 40 times, I'm telling you right now, Packers are going to pull the upset. So let's see. In Sunday's game, Dak Prescott had 38 attempts. He was sacked twice. Let's see. That's 40 play calls for passes. Ezekiel Elliott had 22 carries. Ezekiel Elliott had a 5.7-yard average. Every time he touched the ball, he was getting 6 yards a pop. And they still threw the ball 40 times. Jason Garrett is an idiot. It seems to me, and maybe I'm just imagining things, it seems to me that maybe I said something about this like a few weeks ago. I'm calling it right now. I'm saying it right now. Feel free. You can have breaking news if you want to. Breaking news, I'm telling you right now, the Cowboys are going to eventually get beat in the postseason, and it's going to be because Jason Garrett likes to think he's smarter than everyone else. It's coming. I'm calling it right now. It's coming. Way to go, Jason Garrett. You're super smart. You're an Ivy League guy. You're smarter than everyone else. Isn't that what he really wants? And that's what he wants to hear, right? It's too simple just to hand the ball off and hand the ball off. And until they stop you, just keep handing the ball off. Look, if you don't want Aaron Rodgers on the field, run the ball, eat the clock, and keep him off the field. Jason Garrett, I don't get it. I understand he's the puppet under Jerry Jones, and I don't get it. They could have won that game. They should have won that game. And they didn't because Jason Garrett likes to prove he's smarter than everyone else. Final game of the weekend, the Pittsburgh Steelers didn't score any touchdowns and still beat the Kansas City Chiefs 18-16. Andy Reid strikes again.
Hey, Kool-Aid! Oh yeah, here comes Kool-Aid. Here comes Kool-Aid. I'm gonna save the day.
I don't know how he does it, but he does. Every year, he's like Jason Voorhees. You think there's no way Andy Reid's going to do it again. But here he is again, sucking in the postseason. The Chiefs had a bye week to get ready for the Steelers. And they managed to gain just 227 yards against the Steelers defense that, yes, looks like they're getting better, but they've been giving up almost 350 yards all season. So Kansas City continues their streak of not winning a playoff game, which I think goes back, I don't know, ancient times? Babylon? I don't know. It's been a while, is what I'm trying to say. Now, here's one thing. I don't want to hear Chiefs tight end Travis Kelce complaining about the refs after the game. And I saw, when the hold took place, if you didn't see it, the Chiefs are going for two to tie the game. Very little time remaining in the game. They're going for two. They convert the two-point conversion, and there's a holding call that brings it back. They had to try it again. Didn't complete it the next time around. I said at the time, oh man, I don't know if I make that call right there. Like, I don't know if I make... Yes, it's a hold. There's no question it's a hold. Could you call it on every play? Yes, I understand all that. Yes, I thought it was a hold. I don't know if I call it with the game hanging in the balance. And it wouldn't have won the game for the Chiefs. It simply would have made it a tie game and maybe you play some extra football or whatever. But you know what I don't want to hear? I don't want to hear Chiefs side and Travis Kelce complaining about the refs after the game. Someone else can complain, but not you. Not when you were horrible and the offense was horrible all day. You don't get to say anything. Like, someone on the defense has to say something, not you. You can't say anything. You were terrible all day. You're not allowed to talk. You know, Steelers defense, I'll give them some credit. Stepped up, played pretty well. And Le'Veon Bell, again, incredible. Carried the ball 30 times. Little note, Jason Garrett, 30 times. And you know what happened? He had 170 yards. Pretty amazing how that works, isn't it? Le'Veon Bell, amazing. He's really fun to watch. And I'll say this about Le'Veon Bell. On the field, off the field, makes no difference. That dude can burn up some grass. The AFC Championships are set. We have got the Pittsburgh Steelers heading to the New England Patriots. You know, I think the Steelers offense is going to have some success against that New England defense. Hey, the Pittsburgh offensive line really impressed me against the Chiefs. You know, Ben Roethlisberger didn't get touched until very, very late in the game when there was a coverage sack. It wasn't like a speed rush got to him. It was a coverage sack. He had time. And I've got news for you. Chiefs defensive line, a lot better than the Patriots. So I expect the Steelers to be able to score some points. And the Patriots, like I told you, are dangerously thin at wide receiver. Steelers defense looked very, very good in Kansas City. Here is the problem. And this doesn't make any sense. Tom Brady owns the Steelers. He owns the Steelers. He is 9-2 against Pittsburgh overall. He has never lost to them in the playoffs. I think the Patriots are actually undermanned in this game. I don't think they have as good of players as the Steelers do. I don't think they do. But I'm saying Tom Brady will find a way to win in a close game. And yes, I know, we'll probably find out in a few years it's because they piped in laughing gas into the stadium or they shot their players up with some illegal substance, yak blood or something. I don't know. It'll be something. But I'm taking the Patriots to win that game, despite the fact I don't think they're as good. But I think Tom Brady will will them to a win. And then the other game, the NFC, and I'll be honest, this might be the best matchup that we're going to see. This might be it. Don't you just know, though, that the television networks are praying for any of the three teams except the Atlanta Falcons? Brady versus Rodgers, perfect. Roethlisberger versus Rodgers, not bad. Anybody but the Falcons. But this is a great matchup. Aaron Rodgers is playing at an insanely high level. He is coming up with every clutch throw. And, you know, with the level of difficulty that he's having on these throws, honestly, we're seeing something historical. We really are. At some point, think about the fact you will tell your kids, your grandkids, whatever, I saw Rodgers play when he was as good as he ever was. And he was something special. He's putting himself in the category of the Elways, the Marinos, the Bradys, the Montanas. That's how good Aaron Rodgers is playing right now. Here is the problem. Matt Ryan has way more weapons than Rodgers does. Julio Jones alone is better than anyone that Aaron Rodgers has. But wait, there's more. He's got Tevin Coleman. He's got Devontae Freeman. He's got Mohamed Sanu. He's got Taylor Gabriel. Not to mention, he has, you know, an actual defense. It's insane to pick against Aaron Rodgers. But because of the supporting cast, I think I'm picking the Atlanta Falcons. Yeah. I can't believe I'm going to say it. I think it's going to be Patriots versus Falcons in the Super Bowl. Should be a really, really fun week for the NFL championships, though. Do you realize that NFL kickers have not yet missed a kick in the postseason? Now, I don't know if it's going to happen this weekend. I don't know if it's going to happen the weekend of the Super Bowl. But, you know, we've seen kickers missing all year. Missing field goals, missing extra points. And I'm having a hard time thinking that the football gods aren't going to rise up and make someone miss in a particularly painful way. It's coming. I truly believe it's coming. Don't say you didn't know. Hey, we still have to hand out our annual college football awards plus a Daily Dose top five you do not want to miss. We'll be right back.
Hey guys, it's TJ. I know you're enjoying the wonderful content the Rogue Intel Podcast Network provides you. We really couldn't do this without the support of you, our wonderful listeners. One of the best ways you can say thank you also happens to be one of the easiest ways. Just go to rogueintel.com/Amazon and do your Amazon shopping as you normally would. It won't cost you anything, and you'll be supporting your favorite podcast network. That's rogueintel.com/Amazon.
Harry Potter, what are you doing listening to Rogue Intel? That podcast is for Slytherin.
Dear podcast listener, we accept the fact that we have to sacrifice not only our Wednesdays, but our Fridays as well to entertain you. But we think you are crazy to make us do a promo telling you who we think we are. When you listen to our podcast, you think you know who we are, in the simplest terms, in the most convenient definitions. But what we found out is that each one of us is a dork.
I had the basket case.
And I'm a princess.
And I'm a pothead.
Does that answer your question? Sincerely yours, The Prime Podcast. Find out more at theprimepod.com.
Okay, we've got to discuss the NBA All-Star Game situation. No, I'm not talking about the game itself. As bad as the game itself is, and it's horrible, it's basically guys just walking up and down the floor while one guy dunks, and then they turn around and walk back down the other side of the floor, and then someone else dunks. And yes, the game itself is horrible. And no, I'm not even talking about how bad the dunk contest has gotten. And who knows what they're changing it to this year. Every once in a while, they're, okay, we're going to put a time limit on it, and then there's no time limit, and then you can do whatever you want, and then we have teams. Or the dunk contest, they've made that into something stupid that it should never be. And you know, in the next few weeks, maybe we'll have to discuss a few ways to improve All-Star Weekend, just in general. But that's actually not what I'm talking about either. What I'm actually talking about is the All-Star voting. And now, I know it sounds cute to have the media vote. And I know it even sounds cuter to have the fans vote. But it's kind of asinine. The media, we know, has biases. So the media just votes for the guys that play in their area. Like where they cover. Because, hey, I'm generating business for myself. Here in Colorado, if I go vote for Denver Nuggets to get in, I've got more to talk about as a writer. I've got more to talk about on my TV show or whatever it might be. So having the media vote is idiotic. Having the fans vote is even stupider. Like a lot stupider. Because the fans vote based on their team or their home country, or whatever it might be. Here's the problem. These guys get contracts based on being an all-star. Hey, I'm a two-time all-star. I should get this much money. Hey, I'm a 10-time all-star. I should get this much money. It's idiotic. You want some proof of how stupid it is? Right now, here are some of the players getting into the all-star game. Derrick Rose. What is he leading the league in? MIA minutes? Jeremy Lin is getting into the All-Star game. Of course. Of course. He's getting the home country vote. Zaza Pachulia. Who is this? Zaza Pachulia? Am I saying that right? I don't know if I'm saying that right. I have no idea who he is with the Golden State Warriors. He's like from Georgia or something over in that Eastern Bloc area. How in the world is this guy getting voted in? Because everyone from that country is going to vote and vote and vote and vote and vote. It's idiotic. This has nothing to do with performance. This is making a complete mockery of how stupid the All-Star game already is. Like, it's already dumb. We don't need to have it dumber. It has nothing to do with performance. It has nothing to do with what people actually do on the basketball court. Put it back in the players' hands. And I know I don't expect that much of the players. I really don't in the NBA. But players actually vote for the people they respect. They'll actually vote for the people who, hey, when I go out and play, I've got to have my A game against this guy. You're not going to go out and vote for Jeremy Lin. That's idiotic. And the NBA needs to fix it. Because it's dumb. Okay, we've got to get to our annual college football awards. Of course, college football season ended last week with the Clemson Tigers knocking off the Alabama Crimson Tide in a phenomenal national championship, or at least a great end to a national championship. But, you know, we have to put the finishing touches on the season, and we've got to hand out a few awards. Now, you all know I do lean on some different people to help me in this process of creating the Daily Dose. I don't just wake up one morning and just start talking. Well, I sort of do. But I don't just wake up one morning without any inspiration from anyone else. And there are a few people that contribute to the Daily Dose, whether it's through text or emails, tweets, send me different things, guys that I talk to or people that I have conversations with. And so I have asked a few of the people who contribute, or even a few of the people who sometimes come on and appear on the show, to kind of pitch in their votes for the college football season as well. So here are the Daily Dose College Football Awards. We've got a few categories here, and a few people that you're going to recognize if you listen to the show. Best game of the year. Think back. Number of good games this year. I don't know if it was a phenomenal season, but a number of very good games this year in college football. Now, John from the Inland Empire has come on the show a number of times. John comes on, he'll talk baseball, he'll talk football, talk basketball, he can talk just about anything. John cast his vote for Clemson beating Louisville. Remember that game? That was a phenomenal game at the time. I mean, you had Deshaun Watson versus Lamar Jackson, high-scoring game, back and forth, really, really fast-paced, crazy game. Clemson beating Louisville, that's definitely a very, very good vote there. Now, some of you may have heard Rob. Rob is one of those, he's kind of quiet a little bit. I don't know if I can lure Rob onto the show. I need to try to get Rob onto the show. Rob needs to come on and help me out talking some soccer, because I don't know anything about soccer. If I've got soccer stuff, I lean on him. But the good thing about Rob, same thing. He can talk some football, talk some college football, professional football, talk some hoops. He can talk just about anything. And like I've told you before, Rob's sneaky funny. He can sneak in some things on you. Rob's vote is Clemson versus Alabama in the national championship game. Hey, I understand it. Pretty exciting game, especially the finish. The finish just, it left you wanting so much more. Pretty good game there. I understand that. Someone else that contributes to the show, Travis. Travis is out in farm country, Colorado somewhere. I don't know, Brighton. Travis is a good guy. He contributes to the show here and there. Travis says Rose Bowl, Southern Cal over Penn State. Another excellent choice there. That was a really, really good bowl game. That, to me, is one of the best bowl games we've seen in the last few years. It might be a better game, start to finish, than the Clemson-Alabama National Championship game. I realize there was nothing on the line, and it was just an exhibition. But that Penn State-USC game, where USC has the lead, loses the lead, down late, comes back, kicks a field goal, another good option. So who is my pick for the best college football game of the year? I'm going to throw one out there for you. You probably forgot about it. I'm going to give you Texas over Notre Dame 50-47 in two overtimes. And I'm going to tell you why. Because the game didn't matter. See, neither of these teams did anything. It was opening weekend. I love opening weekend. Opening weekend, there's so much hope. Oh, it's going to be a great season. Look at who this team's going to be. Maybe this team's going to be great. Maybe this team. Remember how innocent we were opening weekend? We didn't know all these things yet. We thought Alabama was unbeatable after they rolled USC the way they did. They ended up getting beat in the national championship game. We thought Notre Dame will probably still bounce back. They'll still be pretty good this year. It's just a fun time of year. You don't know what to expect. We don't know what's going to happen. Just innocent then. We thought Texas might look past their racism and give Charlie Strong a fair shake. To be innocent again. I want to hearken back to a more innocent time. So that's my vote. I don't know, you can pick one of those. What was the biggest upset? What was the best upset? We had some good upsets this year. Of course, the national championship, a little bit of an upset. Everybody thought it was going to be Alabama. Who are the nominees for the best upset of the season? John votes Lane Kiffin getting a coaching job. Yeah, no, I get it. Lane Kiffin getting any kind of a coaching job again. You look at what Lane has done in his history. Getting a head job kind of surprised me a little bit. No, that's an upset. Rob votes Pitt beating eventual champion Clemson in week 11. People kind of forget that. Clemson kind of just looked like they were winning, but it wasn't very pretty, and the defense didn't look very good, but they kept winning. And finally, Pitt, of all teams, knocks off Clemson in Week 11. That's an upset. Now, Dylan Brooks has appeared on the show a few times. Talks some NFL. He's a writer here locally in Denver. And Dylan chipped in on this one. Dylan says Clemson winning it all definitely was an upset. Like that answer? Who saw Clemson coming in and winning the whole thing? Travis. Again, Travis says, now Travis is going to go a different route here. Travis says any game where the SEC actually lost was an upset. I don't know if that's true. What is my vote for the best upset? I am going to say best upset is going to be Oklahoma State beating Central Michigan in Week 2.
That ain't true!
Now, you might hear that and think, wait a second. I remember that game. Like, I remember Central Michigan scored on the final play of the game, and you'd be right. You're correct. The officials incorrectly awarded Central Michigan with an untimed down, and they won on the final play of the game. But Oklahoma State Cowboys coach Mike Gundy says it didn't happen. He was quoted as saying, "Nobody will ever convince me that we didn't get that win." Hey, who's more believable, your own lying eyes or a 40-year-old man?
I'm a man. I'm 40.
I think we all know the answer to that question, don't we? Best upset, clearly a win that never took place. So, yeah, Oklahoma State winning. There's your best upset. Coach of the year. Who is the college football coach of the year? John out in California votes for Steve Sarkisian. The guy went from unemployed to Washington. Then when they were ranked too low, ended up getting fired. And then he went to Bama and actually coached the national championship with him. Yeah, Steve Sarkisian. He might be the coach of the year. It's not a bad pick. Rob picks James Franklin at Penn State. I don't know if James Franklin at Penn State is getting near enough credit that he deserves. When you think of what Penn State has gone through and all the horrible things that happened back at Penn State, taking statues down, and I understand it. I get it completely. But what James Franklin has done to bring that program back from the dead, pretty impressive stuff. Dylan says, I'm not sure who is the best coach of the year, but I know who it's going to be next year. New Rams coach Sean McVay, because the Rams are going to start 0-6. He's going to get fired and probably get signed as the new Alabama offensive coordinator prior to the national championship game. Yes. Yeah, no, you're probably right. Probably right. Travis says Colorado coach Mike McIntyre, mostly because Buffs need something to cheer for when they return to Sucksville. Well, I don't know. If that's fair. It's probably accurate. No, that's probably true. Who is my coach of the year in college football? I am going to vote for Michigan coach Jim Harbaugh. Yeah, that's who I'm going with. I'm going with Harbaugh. Has there ever been a program talked about more that didn't do one single thing? I mean, honestly, the Wolverines faced three ranked teams all season, and they barely beat one of them. They scraped past Wisconsin 14-7. That's it. Remember when they lost to Ohio State? They didn't even drop a spot in the polls. The polls were just like, we didn't see it. I don't know what happened, but we're not going to watch that. They lost their bowl game to Florida State. Outstanding job, Jim Harbaugh. You suckered everyone into thinking Michigan was back and Michigan was legit. Didn't really do anything at all. I'm giving it to Jim Harbaugh. All right, best college football quarterback. Who could best quarterback be? John votes for Deshaun Watson for beating Alabama. Yep, I see that. Rob votes for Deshaun Watson for beating Alabama. Travis says, now Travis, can I preface this? I got to say this about Travis. Love Travis. Travis is an Oklahoma Big 12 fan. I'm going to throw that out there. You take it for what it's worth. Travis says, tie between Oklahoma quarterback Baker Mayfield. Hey, Mayfield was playing phenomenal down the stretch. I'll give him that. And Clemson quarterback Deshaun Watson. With an honorable mention going to SEC quarterbacks. Again, see, he's taking shots at the SEC.
That ain't true!
You see that? See what Travis is doing here? Who is my quarterback of the year? I'm actually going to go... that's a tough one. Deshaun Watson, really, really good. Few quarterbacks out there, pretty good. I'm going to go with Notre Dame quarterback Deshaun Kizer. No, really, I am. Kizer is currently being ranked by most experts as the top quarterback in the upcoming NFL draft. Sure, you know, the Irish went like 4-8, but come on. When is this all about winning and losing? And doesn't it seem like a 4-8 record. Like, doesn't that seem like DeShone Kizer is a perfect fit for the Cleveland Browns right now? Aww. Like, he could, like, that's perfect. Yeah, I'm going with DeShone Kizer. It's my best quarterback of the year. He wins. Who is the best running back of the year? Best running back. John says San Diego State's Donnell Pumphrey has to be the fastest back in the country. He might be. He might be. Pumphrey's a little bit below a lot of the national radar. And, of course, San Diego State plays their games at like 2 in the morning on the East Coast time. Donald Pumphrey's pretty good. Rob votes for Dalvin Cook from Florida State. Another guy. Speed to burn. Dalvin Cook, if you saw him in that game against Michigan, what was that, the Orange Bowl? Dalvin Cook's really good. Really good. Travis says every running back in the SEC, but that ESPN requires him to say that. See, again, he's taking shots at the SEC. I'm actually going to go running back of the year. I'm going to go with Oklahoma running back Joe Mixon. Hey, say what you want about Joe Mixon. Dude is a big hitter. I mean, he could be a knockout draft pick for whatever team selects him. Because the thing that separates Joe Mixon from some of the other backs is his ability just to cold cock the competition. I know they have a great running back, but you know the Dallas Cowboys just have to be looking at Joe Mixon like, that guy. That's our kind of guy right there. I'm going with Joe Mixon from Oklahoma. All right, best wide receiver. Who is the best wide receiver in college football this year? John says USC wide receiver Juju Smith is a pro receiver, just that he's still playing in college. And I'd agree with him. Juju Smith, really, really good. He should be playing on Sundays. Rob says Clemson's Mike Williams. We saw in the national championship game, Mike Williams is incredible. His ability to go up and attack a football in the air, pretty amazing. Travis says Oklahoma wide receiver Dede Westbrook. Dede Westbrook got invited to the Heisman ceremony. Westbrook had a great year. Man, speaking of fast guys, Westbrook, pretty good. Who is my pick for best wide receiver? I am going to go, that's tough. I'm going to go with Ohio State running back Curtis Samuel. I know he's a running back. And I'll be honest, I don't have any idea if he can even catch a football. But I did see him take 4 or 5 fingers from Clemson defensive lineman Christian Wilkins. Say what you want. Wide receiver indeed. Okay, so who is our selection? The Daily Dose pick for the Heisman Trophy. Ask for everybody's pick. Who do you got for the Heisman Trophy? Here is everyone's pick. John goes with Louisville quarterback Lamar Jackson. Hey, Lamar Jackson won the trophy. He's the guy. He actually won it all. Had a phenomenal start to the season. Really, really good. Faded down the stretch. Really, really good at times. Rob goes with Deshaun Watson. Was the best player all season. I can't argue with that. Had a few more interceptions than I think maybe some people expected, but Deshaun Watson, phenomenal all year. Dylan Brooks goes with Stanford running back Christian McCaffrey because he should have won it last year, and I'm still upset that he didn't. I'll hear that. Christian McCaffrey was better this year, I think, than maybe he gets credit for, but we'd already seen it last year, and this year was a step back, so he's not getting the credit. Travis goes with Oklahoma State head coach Mike Gundy's mullet.
That ain't true!
No. See, that's the thing about the people that help me with the Daily Dose. I don't know what I'm going to get. Mike Gundy's mullet, though, is pretty good. I don't know if it should win the Heisman. It should win something. It's good. It's a moulet. It's so good. So I'll give you a little bit of that. No, that mullet, it deserves some sort of a trophy. Tough decision. Of course, we know Louisville quarterback Lamar Jackson did win it. But if we revoted right now, would Lamar Jackson even get invited to the ceremony? He lost his final 3 games badly, and he threw just 3 touchdowns while having 3 interceptions. But remember, Heisman voters are like little kids at a birthday party. They get all excited early, they get all hopped up on ice cream, and then they end up falling asleep in the corner like for the bowl games. Because they vote for these awards prior to the bowl game, so they don't even see him. But here's the thing. While Lamar Jackson faded in his final 3 games, I got to go with Deshaun Watson. He beat Virginia Tech, he beat Ohio State, and he beat Alabama in his final 3 games while being responsible for scoring, either throwing or running, 12 touchdowns. Our Heisman winner pick. I'm going to Clemson quarterback Deshaun Watson. Now, next season, as we look forward to college football, and I think college football next year actually is going to be very, very fun. Remember, Lamar Jackson is going to be back. Remember, Alabama quarterback Jalen Hurts is going to be back. Florida State should be very good. USC has Sam Darnold coming back. Penn State doesn't lose much of anything. Ohio State might actually score some points in a big game, but Ohio State doesn't lose much of anything. Remember, going into the year, this was kind of if things survive this year, next year should be very good. Next year in college football, it's going to be a very, very fun season. And I hate to say, I already miss it. I already wish college football was coming back around again. It is such a fun time of year. I am sad to see it go. Okay, I hate to point this out. Honestly, I do. I hate to even bring this up. I don't even want to bring this up. But Valentine's Day is coming quickly. So head over to lootcrate.com/dailydose. Loot Crate will deliver a monthly crate filled with exclusive items and apparel from your favorite TV shows, from your favorite movies, from comic books, from games, and from a ton more. You can go order a crate, a subscription of crates, or even just individual items that you like. The January crate is called Origins. It features items from Superman, Nintendo, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, a lot of cool stuff in there that you're going to like. And the best part about ordering is when you place your order, just put the words Daily Dose, DALYDOSE, in the coupon box. You'll get 10% off your order. Loot Crate will actually kick us a little money. We will forward that to the Billy Betts Lacrosse Fund, which helps kids get involved in sports. You'll get what you need, and your Valentine will get what they want. Plus, we help some needy kids get involved in sports. Everybody wins in that situation, so make sure that you do that. Now, we have got to get to our Daily Dose Top 5. And we talked about it a little bit earlier. Of course, the San Diego Chargers are moving to L.A. What's it been, 56 years or something since they were in Los Angeles? And it looks like the Oakland Raiders are going to move to Las Vegas. You know, both of these moves are going to leave a lot of bitter, bitter fans in their wake. Look what's happening right now. Raider fans are bitter and angry. And I mean more than usual. Because some of that is because they're going to be the answer to the trivia question, which NFL franchise actually lost to Brock Osweiler in the playoffs? But it's not just that. It's also because their team could be taking residence between like Don Rickles and Siegfried and Roy. And then in San Diego, Chargers fans, did you see that Chargers fans, some of them actually went to team headquarters and dumped like literally tens of jerseys in front of headquarters? Like, I mean, that many. Who knew? Like, I don't know, maybe 11 jerseys? I don't know. So maybe these three aren't the best examples of franchises leaving and the fans being bitter, but bottom line, there have been very bitter moves by pro sports franchises. So today, our Daily Dose Top 5 counts down the top 5 bitter franchise moves of all time. Number 5 on our list. You know, Houston Oilers owner Bud Adams has always been a jerk. And you know, the Oilers began as an expansion franchise back in 1960. And no, they weren't ever great. But they had given us some really, really memorable teams. Now, the AFL Oilers actually won 2 championships. They won back-to-back championships in the AFL in 1960 and 1961. And the Oilers actually scored some really big points over the NFL when they signed LSU Heisman winner Billy Cannon to their team instead of him going to the NFL. Now, you might remember a few other pretty memorable Oiler teams. Remember the Love Ya Blue teams from the 70s and 80s? Dan Pastorini, Earl Campbell, Kenny Burrows, Mike Barber, Mike Renfro, Billy White Shoes Johnson. And honestly, the only thing that kept that Oiler team from winning big was they had to get past those 70s Steeler teams. Pretty tough to do. And that 90s group. Remember that early 90s group with Warren Moon? They ran the run and shoot. They won a ton of games. Who's that? Haywood Jeffries, Curtis Duncan, Drew Hill, I think was on that team. He had like Mike Rozier in the backfield. That was another fun team. Won a lot of games. Yes, they lost a lot of games at the very end. They gave up some big, big comebacks, but they won a lot of games. But you know, Bud Adams didn't like the stadium deal that he had. And Houstonians had actually approved improvements to the Astrodome. But they weren't enough to suit Adams, so he began shopping the team. He agreed to move the Oilers to Nashville for the 1998 season. Houston fans were ticked. So they weren't going yet. They still had 2 seasons to go. But Houston fans just stopped going to games. The 1996 season was an absolute mess. No one went to the games. It was so quiet at those Oiler games, you could actually hear the conversations that were going on down on the field. So following the season, a deal was actually reached to let the Oilers out of their lease and move early. They went to Tennessee, changed their name to the Titans, and Houston then got the expansion Houston Texans in 1999. Now, this would actually get a little bit worse for Houston fans as in just, you know, like a few years later, they would pay $72 million to a quarterback named Brock Osweiler. I think the lesson here is the city of Houston just can't have nice things.
That ain't true!
Number four on our list. You know, the Seattle Supersonics had some really good teams. They were formed back in 1966. I want you to think for just a second of some of the players that played for the Seattle Supersonics. Walt Hazard, Lenny Wilkins, Spencer Haywood, Fred Brown, Tommy Burleson, Jack Sikma, Gus Williams, Dennis Johnson, Tom Chambers, Gary Payton, Sean Kemp, Dale Ellis, Ray Allen, Ricky Pierce, Detlef Schrempf, Xavier McDaniel, Michael Cage. The Sonics won the championship in 1979. Fans in Seattle actually supported the Sonics really well, but ownership wanted major renovations done to Key Arena. Renovations actually to the tune of $220 million. Seattle residents said no. And in 2007, the owners announced they would be moving to Oklahoma City. You know, the move to Oklahoma City has actually been in and out of the courts because fans have argued for years that the Seattle ownership didn't actually make a good faith effort to try to keep the team in Seattle. Doesn't look like anything's ever going to come of it. The Oklahoma City Thunder, of course, are rolling, and Seattle maybe would be in line if there was ever an expansion or if somebody was going to move, because that is a good fan base up in Seattle. But they lost the Supersonics, and a team that was pretty good, had a pretty good history. Seattle Supersonics moving to Oklahoma City, definitely a bitter move. Number three on our list, I'll be honest, I could put number three a little bit higher. I really could, based on the history. But it's baseball, so I don't really care that much. The Brooklyn Dodgers. You know, Brooklyn was actually home to a few baseball clubs way, way, way back. But the Brooklyn Trolley Dodgers became the most popular of all the baseball teams. They actually became the first Major League Baseball team to break the color barrier by signing and playing Jackie Robinson back in 1957. But the Dodgers were known more for coming up short. They lost the World Series 6 times while in Brooklyn, and their unofficial slogan became, "Just wait till next year." But you know, the team had a very close bond with the fans in Brooklyn, and they actually did win a title in 1955. But in 1950, businessman Walter O'Malley had acquired majority ownership, and he was buying up land in the Brooklyn area to try to build a new stadium. Isn't that what this is always about, trying to get a new stadium? But he found out he couldn't get the space that was needed. So he began looking west. On April 18th, 1958, the Brooklyn Dodgers played their first game at the Los Angeles Coliseum and were now the Los Angeles Dodgers. The story goes, if you asked an original Brooklyn Dodgers fan if they had the gun with the two bullets in the room, Hitler, Stalin, O'Malley, most of them say they would shoot Walter O'Malley twice. That was a bitter, bitter move when the Brooklyn Dodgers went to Los Angeles. Number two on our list. This one is pretty shady. I don't know if it's the shadiest, but it's pretty shady. Baltimore Colts owner Robert Irsay had been trying to get a new stadium to replace Baltimore's ancient Memorial Stadium. Irsay had a deal in place for $25 million worth of renovations. But the plan was contingent upon both the Baltimore Orioles and the Colts signing long-term deals. And the Orioles wouldn't do it. They signed a one-year lease, but they did end up staying. The city of Indianapolis was hoping to get an expansion franchise, but NFL Commissioner Pete Rozelle said there were no plans to expand. And then it all went down. On March 29th, 1984, Irsay brought in the Mayflower trucks at night. He did it late at night because he was afraid that the Maryland House of Delegates might block the move. And in fact, the very next day, they did block the move, but it was too late. They had packed up everything Colts from Baltimore, had taken it to Indianapolis. And Baltimore not only lost their team, They lost their team name. They no longer had the Colts. And many fans still haven't forgiven Ursay or the Ursay family for it. The Colts snuck out of Baltimore. It was shady. Came in at night, loaded all the stuff, got out of town. There were a couple of pictures of, you know, the Mayflower trucks driving at night, getting out of there. It was shady. Okay, but what could be number one? Honestly, what could be number one on our Daily Dose top five bitter franchise moves? There's only one that can go here. Art Modell sticks it to the city of Cleveland once again. Of course, the Browns owner had promised he would never move the team from Cleveland. In 1975, Art Modell signed a 25-year lease with Municipal Stadium. And don't forget, he had publicly criticized the Colts moving from Baltimore the way they did, sneaking out at night. He had been a big, big critic of that move. He had also been one of the NFL owners that had tried to block Al Davis from moving the Oakland Raiders to Los Angeles. Now, the Cleveland Browns shared Municipal Stadium with the Cleveland Indians, but Modell refused to share any of the revenue with the baseball team. So the Indians got fed up, and they went and got Jacobs Field built, and so they left. Now, Art Modell realized he actually wasn't making as much money as he thought he was. So he requested an issue be placed on the ballot to generate $175 million in tax money to refurbish the stadium in Cleveland. Municipal Stadium would get refurbished with $175 million. On November 6th, 1995, Art Modell announced he would move the team to Baltimore. Couldn't make enough money. He needed a new city. He needed a new stadium. The very next day, November 7th, the city of Cleveland approved the ballot measure to rebuild the stadium. But the team moved. They renamed them the Ravens. And in 2000, those Browns / Ravens won the Super Bowl. Art Modell got a Lombardi trophy. Horrible. Absolutely horrible. In 1999, the city of Cleveland was awarded an expansion franchise, and the Browns came back. They were reborn, and they were awful, and they've been poorly run ever since, and just kind of how they still remain today. And you know, it still remains popular for Cleveland fans to take pictures and take videos of themselves desecrating the grave of Art Modell, who actually died in 2012. But that, without a doubt, is our number one bitter pro sports franchise move. Hey, next week on the show, the Super Bowl is going to be all set. We will recap the conference championships, and we will start looking forward to Super Bowl 51. Plus, got some NBA, college basketball, and as we just saw, you never know which way it's going to go, the Daily Dose Top 5. Got to make sure that you stick around for that. If you get a chance, please go to wherever it is that you download the show and just click that little subscribe button. It helps us get seen by a few more people, and they take notice that we have a few more subscribers. Plus, then you'll be sure not to miss any of the new episodes as they come out. Feel free to contact us with what's on your mind. Email us at dailydosesports@gmail.com or find us on Facebook or Twitter at Daily Dose Sports. And be sure to do any shopping that you might need to do at lootcrate.com/dailydose and enter the coupon code DAILYDOSE to get 10% off your order. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all next week.